This is an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The focus is on plank number 29 of 32, and the title of this plank is Adam, Not Ideal Man. The following is the original text in prose format. The word Adam is from the Hebrew Adama, signifying the red color of the ground, dust, nothingness. Divide the name Adam into two syllables and it reads a dam or obstruction. This suggests the thought of something fluid, of mortal mind in solution. It further suggests the thought of, that is, quote, darkness upon the face of the deep. When matter or dust was deemed the agent of deity in creating man. When matter, as that which is accursed, stood opposed to spirit. Here, a dam is not a mere play upon words. It stands for obstruction, error, even the supposed separation of man from God, and the obstacle which the serpent, sin, would impose between man and his creator. The dissection and definition of words, aside from their metaphysical derivation, is not scientific. Jehovah declared the ground was accursed, and from this ground, or matter, sprang Adam. Notwithstanding, God had blessed the earth for man's sake. From this it follows that Adam was not the ideal man for whom the earth was blessed. The ideal man was revealed in due time and was known as Christ Jesus. That's the end of the text in prose format, and here are the key points utilizing the original text from above. Each key point will be supplemented with any related thoughts by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. 1. The word Adam is from the Hebrew Adama, signifying the red color of the ground, dust, nothingness. Comment. It is important to look up the original language word, as that can determine whether or not you are understanding what you think is intended in the message. The internet provides very comprehensive information on both pronunciations and definitions. Strong's provides an interlinear, which is very valuable. You're welcome to send a message through our contact form if you desire more information. The term Adam is a major warning sign that any time it is used in the Bible or by Mary Baker Eddy, as well as the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, that the atmosphere is of the lowest level of consciousness, which is depravity. The textbook includes three introductory quotes. They are as follows. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. Number two, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare. Number three, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. The first one tells us we must be looking for the truth, and of course that traces right back to what was already mentioned about making sure we understand the original word in its original language. Shakespeare, in quote number 2, is of great wisdom about our consciousness. As it is applied to Adam, the only thing we want to do with that kind of a word is to deny that it is real and therefore cannot have any influence on us as a child of God. Quote number 3 is by Mary Baker Eddy. This quotation is giving us very valuable information on prayer and how it relates to the Bible, where it says we must pray without ceasing. The only way that that can be accomplished is to live the prayer. What does that mean? It means there are laws of the universe which are God's laws, and if we live within those laws, then that means that we are adhering to a way of life that is going to automatically bless not only us, but everyone in which our thought touches upon, every contact we make, whether by thought, speech, or action. These are 3 of the most important quotations of the entire textbook, because they are intended to prepare our thought for the entire 700 pages, being the introduction to the textbook itself. Having recited these introductory quotes to the textbook is a wake-up call to take a look at the introductory quotes for the chapter where the platform is included, which is Chapter 10, Science of Being. And the introductory quotes are as follows. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled of the word of life, that which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father, and with His Son, Jesus Christ. That is from 1 John, which is by Jesus' beloved disciple, John. And the second of 2 quotes is from Martin Luther. Here I stand. I can do no otherwise. So help me God. Amen. The textbook that the Mary Baker Eddy Institute utilizes is the final edition by Mary Baker Eddy, which was 1910. Any publication after her final edition has changes in it, which were not authorized by her, of course, because that's the date that she left. And as a matter of fact, the day that she passed, her picture was removed from the textbook. Talk about an attack on truth. That's about as severe as one can get, trying to separate the discoverer from the discovery. Think about the commandments. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. That's the end of the comments on point number 1. Key point number 2. Divide the name Adam into 2 syllables and it reads a dam or obstruction. Contemplate that for a moment. Not only does the name Adam put us into the level of depravity of consciousness, but it has a built-in obstruction to try to prevent us from getting out. In other words, improving our level of consciousness. We cannot transform as long as we dwell on Adam. One of the most brilliant Christian scientists of all time, along with Mary Baker Eddy, of course, is Frederick L. Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. He gives us a suggested method of a prayer procedure. He says we should begin with just stating what the problem is, with the preface that says, there is no. So in referring to the term Adam, anything that we think is a cause related to believing in Adam, such as material birth, or one's DNA, or heritage, one could simply say, there is no Adam. There is no DNA from Adam. There is no heritage of Adam. And then the recommendation by Frederick L. Rawson is to immediately shift thought to a higher level, and he prefers talking next about the absolute, which if you look at the four levels of consciousness, which is on our website, but I will just tell you briefly, the top level is the absolute level, which is God, and perfect man, and perfect idea. And then there are three lower levels. The lowest is the depravity, as mentioned, and the next higher level is moral, and the higher level above that, next to the absolute level of God, is entitled spiritual. So we want to work our way up to the absolute level as quickly as possible, making sure that we're not missing anything that needs to be addressed. If we should skip over something that needs to be contemplated, explored, exposed, and corrected, then we are missing out on one or more of the planks of our platform, which means that we are going to have a hole that is not going to give us a solid foundation, but the opposite. It's going to be an obstruction to elevating to the area that we want to be in. Mary Baker Eddy states, infinite progression is concrete being. We cannot have progression if we have holes in our platform. Key point number three. This suggests the thought of something fluid, of mortal mind in solution. And she's referring to the definition of Adam, a dam, or obstruction. When it refers to mortal mind in solution, it's good to think of the seven synonymous terms for God, and particularly number two, which is spirit. That's in the order of the days of creation, which is from Genesis chapter 1. Number one being mind, which is enlightenment, and number two being spirit, which is substance. If we contemplate the real spirit, the real substance, and not a material sense of either one of those two terms, then we are on the path of progress, which has a foundation of truth, and truth does not include any error or mistakes. No Adam in truth. The system of divine metaphysics can be referred to as a matrix. In the system of divine metaphysics, there are many matrices, but this particular one would have a vertical row of all the synonymous terms and a horizontal row of all the synonymous terms. And therefore, every single synonymous term intersects with all of the other, including its own synonymous term for God. So, for example, the term intelligence is one of the descriptive words for mind. Therefore, we could think of the intelligence of mind itself, the intelligence of spirit, the intelligence of soul, principle, life, truth, love. In other words, are we living an intelligent life? Are we loving in an intelligent way? And if we intersect spirit with life, for example, are we living a life that is spiritual? Are we loving in a spiritual manner? And of course, the opposite of spirit is matter. Are we living a materialistic life? Are we loving in a materialistic way? And this works for every one of the synonymous terms, and every term that describes the synonymous terms, intersecting with all of the other words that describe each of the synonymous terms. It's like an infinite set of matrices. And this is only dealing with the seven synonymous terms. We have the same kind of a matrix with the operators. I won't discuss this any further now, as the topic of this prayer treatment is not the system per se, but only plank number 29 of the 32 planks of the platform, which is just part of the system. The primary thing to consider is whenever anything that is ungodlike that is being discussed, we want to make sure that we look at the opposite. We want to flip it. So here, where it's talking about mortal mind in solution, we want to immediately think of the opposite, which is divine mind. And divine mind is a part of mind with a capital M, and mind with a capital M refers to God, whereas mind with a small m refers to the opposite of God. And everyone probably knows what the opposite of God is. It is a very short name. It either starts with D or it starts with the same word without the D. In other words, D-E-V-I-L or E-V-I-L. And we get nowhere if we're going to focus on that or let that be a part of any of our thought, speech, or action, other than what is recommended by Frederick L. Rosen, where he says, just make the plain statement, there is no, in this case, there is no evil, there is no devil. And then get thought immediately on a higher level. It is much easier to prevent consciousness from having anything embedded in it which is ungodlike than it is to let it be there and try to clean it out. If one has ever been involved in cooking and they're cooking eggs, and they make a mistake and drop one on the floor, they will realize that it is much better to be careful not to drop one on the floor than it is to clean up the mess. The same goes with our consciousness. Don't drop an egg on the floor of our consciousness. The cleanup is not easy. Key point number 4. It further suggests the thought of that is, quote, darkness upon the face of the deep. Now again, we're talking about Adam and being dust of the ground and so forth. An obstruction, a dam, anything that is trying to prevent the flow of pure, clean truth. A dam, of course, restricts the flow, but usually has some controls where it can be opened up partially. Well, we don't want to have the dam there at all. We want the full natural flow of truth to permeate our consciousness and direct our thought, speech, and actions. And whenever the topic has anything to do with Adam, or in this case, mortal mind was the most recent item that was mentioned, then we are in the realm of depravity, which is the opposite of light, which is the first day in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. And when it talks about the deep, there's no end to where evil lurks. Wherever there is truth, there will be its opposite attempting to mock it. Evil operates on decoys, deceit, deception, dishonesty, all of the D words that are bad. And that does not include deity with a capital D. That's why I say all the D words that are bad. Also be aware that everything in life is full of symbols. All things invisible operate based on symbolism. A beautiful tree, a fragrant rose, the strength of courage to do proper thought, speech, and action. These are all symbols of the underlying truth that God is behind them all. There is only one real existence, because there is only one real God, and God is all, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, omniaction. God is the one and only mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. These are all definitions of God, and they're on the home page of the website, mbeinstitute.org. Everything in Christian Science can be related to what is in the Bible. Mary Baker Eddy states, "The Bible has been my only authority. I have had no other guide in, quote, the straight and narrow way of truth." She also states, "Follow your leader only so far as she follows Christ." And also, "Follow my teachings only so far as they follow Christ in word and deed." All three of those quotes are on the home page in the far left column. If we consider those definitions of God, and they are also all on the home page, along with other direct statements about who God is, who man is, and so forth, then we know that there's plenty of ammunition to jump to get our thought off of Adam and evil and dust and false sense of DNA or birth or our heritage, anything to do with the lie upon lie that has been compounded about the belief of a material life, truth, or intelligence in matter. Point number 5. Well, we've already just now covered it, but it says matter or dust was deemed the agent of deity in creating man. Now, that is the story in Genesis chapter 2, which is the story of Adam and Eve. Be aware that verse 6 in chapter 2, before it talks about Adam and Eve, it says, "And there went up a mist." Everyone has probably been in a mist at one time or another, and maybe thousands of times, depending on where you live or where you travel to. Clarity in a mist is not like clarity in a bright sunshine. We want to stay in the enlightenment of divine mind when we're viewing anything and looking through the lens of spirit, which is flawless, because there's no matter in spirit, no opaqueness. It's all transparent, pure, totally flawless. And that's where we want to dwell with our thought, speech, and action. Key point number 6. Matter is that which is accursed and opposed to spirit. That was just covered in the last few sentences. Compounding lie upon lie. That is the curse. The curse that Adam and Eve is the heritage, the DNA, the generations of lies that have been compounded lie upon lie about the truth of our true being as an innocent child of God. I'm not talking about human, I'm talking about spiritual and divine. Everyone alive, I'm sure, has at least one or two things in their closet. I myself have a full closet of mistakes that I've been involved in. We know Jesus had 11 mistakes in his closet, the 11 disciples that betrayed him. Even with his pure thought, he chose 11 wrong people to be his disciples. John was a little bit iffy when he took him up on the mountain, along with Peter and James, because they all three went to sleep when Jesus told them to watch. They were supposed to watch over the world. In other words, make sure they were conveying only spiritual thoughts and that they were passing these on mentally into the universe of truth, the universe of spirit, so that anyone that was interested in tuning in to God's reality, that they would be able to hear the spiritual qualities of God being professed by the three disciples. They would have been propounding it, enumerating it, emphasizing it. Mary Baker Eddy has said, more than anything else, it's what we do with our moments that determine the difference between success and failure. Are we doing our best to live our prayer and to make sure our prayer is in the line of spirit and not matter, in the line of loving your neighbor as you would like to be loved. When Jesus was asked what is the most important commandment of all, he said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." The Bible says we cannot love the invisible, e.g., God, unless we love the visible, e.g., the symbols that are expressing God's qualities. Jesus knew that. He lived that. His prayer was his life. His prayer was reflecting God. Another Pharisee asked Jesus, "Dear Master, how can I attain eternal life?" That happened to be a tax collector, a Pharisee that apparently gained a lot of wealth while he was collecting taxes. Sounds like about every other government in the world. What do you think the response from Jesus was? "Why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God." Then he responded with something that was not received very well. And obviously, if the man had great wealth, and he wanted something else more than that, he obviously felt like what he had value, even though it was materialistic. Jesus recognized what his problem was. He said, "Sell all that thou hast and give to the poor. Then come and follow me." Money is not evil. There is nothing wrong with having wealth that is measured by money. But the most important wealth is not measured in material terms. So if we have money that is more than we need, what are we doing with it? Are we only trying to compound money upon more money and not even thinking about what the greatest commandment of all is? A wise man said, "When you go around the corner," meaning pass on and no longer visible, and that's a little personal interpretation. He said, "When you die, when you're gone, when you pass on," he said, "you can't take anything with you that you've taken during your life. But what you have given away, you can take it all with you. Every bit of it." What could he possibly mean by that? Consider this. If you're searching on the internet for free software, and you are only going to use software that is free, and there's lots of it out there. In fact, probably the most important or the most used word on the internet is free, because that seems to excite almost everyone that does any searching for anything. Have you ever thought that there is no such thing as free? One of the largest companies in the world provides services that they promote as free. But what do? They take your identity. They keep track of everything you do. If you use their service for an email, they capture everything. Attachments, the content of the email, who it's from, who it's to, the subject line, the title of any attachment, as well as the content, the whole shooting match, the whole thing. You're giving up everything. Is that free? Contemplate it. Most of the companies that offer free software provide a donation button, and many of them provide a professional version. The next time you take advantage of something that you think is free, do what Einstein recommends. He says, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. Here's a couple of other quotes by Einstein. He had a friend who was on the Atomic Energy Commission, and Einstein wasn't there. I think he may have had a little more foresight on what their purpose was, which was to learn how to create an atomic bomb to destroy civilization, even though they might think that it would be only directed toward, quote, evil people, end of quote. The point is, the whole idea of a nuclear bomb is not for construction. It's for the opposite. Anyway, his friend Dr. Underwood is the only one that survived from the whole team that was on the Atomic Energy Commission. Everyone else expired from radiation. Expired. They went around the corner. No longer seen, not by anyone, in a world that is inundated with the belief that matter is real substance. So Einstein asked his friend, how is it that you survived and everyone else is gone? He said, I'm a student of Christian Science. I'm a student of the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. I applied what I could learn in my study, which I did methodically and scientifically, and it was effective. These quotes are all on the website. Einstein then took a very serious interest in Christian Science. He had known about it before, and he dabbled a little bit. But remember, his life was full of the opposite. He was researching matter. He was researching how does the world operate, not from the basis of spirit, but from the basis of matter. But he was breaking through the ice some with his theory of relativity, E equal mc squared, and he made a very simple statement about relativity, and again, I'll give you our version of it, and that is that if you're doing something you enjoy, time goes quickly. If you do something that you don't enjoy, it goes slowly. Relativity. Everything in our life, unless we make a concerted effort otherwise, is based on relativity. What we're teaching in these prayer treatments is to get out of the relative and into the absolute as quickly as possible. Not that it doesn't take an infinite number of steps, which never ends. If you're going to be on the progress path, infinite progression is concrete being. But at least we're striving for it, and we're replacing any concept that is less than God with concepts about God being all. He said a couple other things. He said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago, and he was talking about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. He also said, and all of these quotes are after he spent serious time studying it. In fact, he was attending a local church there and spending time in the reading room, which is a part of most churches, where you can go in there like a library and it's quiet. A lot of them have separate rooms that you can go into with computers, so forth. And he said, science without religion is lame. And religion without science is blind. And he also said, and this is probably one of the most dynamic things that he discovered as a result of his study, he said, blessed art thou, for everything that is in this book, referring to the textbook. That was a big leap for him, because he spent his life exploring the opposite, the material sense of things as opposed to the spiritual. But he realized that he was on the wrong track. Okay, next key point. Here, a dam is not a mere play upon words. Well, we already know that. And this can really be combined with the next one, which is key point number 8. So 7 says here, a dam is not a mere play upon words. And then 8 says, it stands for obstruction, error, even the supposed separation of man from God, and the obstacle which the serpent sin would impose between man and his creator. If you're not already aware of it, be advised that man is a generic term used throughout the Bible. So it is not related to gender, but to all humanity. To continue what was partially stated previously about the Bible stating that God is all and the only real existence is what? If God is all, the only real existence that is visible is a reflection of the invisible, the qualities of God. That's what we see as symbols, are the qualities of God symbolized. That should be our goal. Our goal should be a lighthouse. Are we shining our light as a lighthouse does? I don't mean talking about it. I'm talking about doing it silently. Be an example of the goodness of God. Give instead of taking. Build up your storehouse of giving and deplete your storehouse of taking. I'm not talking about depleting any physical asset. That depends on how you're using it. A gun is not evil, but how are you using it? You know, that's an example that's probably extreme, but think about your thoughts. Shakespeare gives us the clue. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Money is not good or bad, but what we're doing with it, what we think about it, is what makes it so. The same with everything that is visible. One of the most important deceptions to be aware of is the connection between a problem and how we think about it as the source, because thinking that we are temporarily or permanently separated from God is one of the most common errors of belief. We are a manifestation. God is the only real source of everything that is real. If we want to be real, then we must be thinking, talking, and acting like the image and likeness of God, as it states in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. 26, it says, "And God said, let us make man after our image and likeness." And 27 says, "And so God made us after his image and likeness." We had to have our thought open to it. We had to have our consciousness open. What God does has nothing to do with anything we do, but our experience is directly related to everything we think, say, and do. Perfection is omnipresent, but we cannot have the benefits of it if we're going to be thinking about something unlike God. If we're going to be taking instead of giving, if we're going to be thinking, speaking, and acting like a devil that is far from thought, speech, and action, like an angel, a messenger of God, a lighthouse that is only shining spiritual qualities, do we want to accumulate by taking, or do we want to accumulate giving? In other words, give, give, give. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. But what do we have that we can tithe? And do we want to just be average? It seems like the Bible refers to the average individual. That's far from a B or an A plus rating. A C is down near the bottom of a pyramid. Are we striving for the apex? And what do we have we can give? There's 1,440 minutes a day. Every 24 hours, no matter when our day begins, we have 24 hours until it rolls around again. What are we doing with the time? How much are we giving to helping others? How much are we giving to give instead of take? Focusing on the well-being of others instead of the well-being of the one we see in the mirror. We find that one of the biggest problems that is faced today is fear of lack. And as a result, there is a great attraction to grab, take all you can, and as often as you can, and as much as you can. You can watch a movie that includes bank robbers. Watch a Western about Jesse James or Bonnie and Clyde. They're always taking and they never have anything. If we're always taking, it doesn't matter how much we have in material things. We don't really have anything of value, of real value, such as the good that we've done for others. Mary Baker Eddy says, the only power obtainable is from the good that we do. The only power, is that the kind of power we want? Power that is permanent? Suppose God had no manifestation. The Bible says that we are the manifestation of God. We're the image and likeness of God. If we didn't exist, could God exist? Could a source exist if the source has no manifestation? Could a pianist exist if he didn't perform? Vladimir Ashkenazy, one of the greatest pianists, if not the greatest pianist of all time, was asked by a critic in a Q&A that Vladimir had in his this particular concert. And he said, how is it that you can perform time after time? And apparently he had followed him through his tours to hear him many times. And he was obviously a well-known critic of pianists. So he said, how is it you can perform with such perfection every single time? Vladimir was a Russian, and so the way he pronounced this word, it won't be correct, but I'll do my best, because I've watched performances on the internet by Vladimir Ashkenazy, and his response was this: I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me. Do we release ourselves, our ego, our preconceptions, and let the truth be revealed and do the guidance? Or are we putting our fingers in the way and think that maybe the truth isn't good enough? Perfection comes from getting ourselves out of the way. And we have to do our part. We recommend the Mary Baker Eddy Institute that don't do anything unless you're going to strive for perfection. We advise, become an expert in whatever you do. And you better begin with knowing the proper way of reading, listening, time management, goal management, priority management. If you're operating a business, be an expert on how to run your business, on the general principles of running any business. Bicknell Young was an excellent Christian Science practitioner. In fact, he raised himself from drowning. He had been declared dead. Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead. We know Jesus did it at least twice with Tabitha and Lazarus. Did any of them that was involved in destroying the belief of death about someone else think of death as being real? Jesus said, the word sleepeth, and I shall awake him. I shall awaken them. I believe he said the same words about Lazarus and Tabitha. If we truly believe in evil, which is anything unlike God, it doesn't matter whether it's sin, disease, death, friction in a relationship, anything. Anything that is not perfectly balanced and harmonious is unlike God. If we believe that to be the truth, we have to start right there with our consciousness. And if we don't have any faith in something we know nothing about, such as Christian Science, read the last 100 pages, in fact, I think it's 101 pages, of the last chapter, which is Fruitage. And that has 85 verified testimonies of people that had a total between the 85 of them, 486 different items that were healed. They were seeking to heal one thing. But because of their spiritual advancement, as they were working on that one problem, many other problems that they weren't even thinking of were healed at the same time. If you read that 101 pages, that'll give you a clue as to what other people have experienced. And Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science in 1866, and churches have been in existence for over 100 years, and every Wednesday in their services is supposed to be a testimony meeting where they testify as to any healings that they want to share with the audience. And there is a weekly publication and a monthly publication that include healings. And this is for over 100 years has been going on. So there are probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of ones that have made it public. And how many people have been healed that they didn't make it public? I mean, this is not something new. This is not something just one person accomplished. But we have to be open. One of the most popular pictures of Jesus, or painting, that was made into photographs or pictures, is of him standing at a door, knocking on the door. Standing there in a white robe, which is a symbol of purity. And it was seamless. So in other words, no separation between him and God. Are we going to let the door be open? Are we going to open the door and let the greatest example of any man in the world come into our consciousness so that we are going to follow him as the greatest example that walked on the earth? Are we going to follow his life of where he gave? And he was attacked all the time. Mary Baker Eddy is like a blueprint of Jesus. She was attacked all the time. And all she did was love, love, love. Gave. How many of Jesus' people that were being taught by his, or the opportunity to learn from his speeches? He had 4,000 at one time, 5,000 at another. And they only counted men, women and children. There were probably 4, 5, 6 times that many people there. So just in those two sessions, he probably had 45, 50, 60,000 people. And how many showed up at his trial to defend him? Zero. How many showed up at his crucifixion? 6. St. John, his beloved disciple, his mother, Mary Magdalene, who had been healed of a past of ill repute, and 2 or 3 others. That's it. And we know there were at least 50 or 60,000 just in those two sessions. And he was always, always giving to people, giving them an opportunity to learn what he had to say. He knew you couldn't teach people. You can only offer the information, and it's up to them to grab onto it, to listen, to learn, transform their life. Are we opening the door to give us an opportunity to do something more than what we're doing now? Do we want to improve on a permanent basis how we think, talk, and act? Wealthiest man in the world, everyone knows who he is. He's done some really extraordinary things. There is no one that I know of, and I've known a number of people that are household names, not a single one of them had either a straight line from the beginning to where they attained their highest achievements, nor was it a parabolic curve. Every single one had challenges. Sylvester Stallone, we have him on our website. He said, life will knock you down on your knees. In the movies, he's known as being a big fighter, never giving up. In real life, he's telling you how it really is. He said, it doesn't matter how far you're knocked down, it's what you do about it. Are you getting back up? The President of the United States, from the very beginning of him being in public politics, I'm sure this has been his motto for his whole life, but he says, never quit, never give up. Always keep moving forward. Always put forth the effort. He's made it very public that he's gone through a lot of trials and tribulations. I doubt if the man that is the wealthiest one in the world got there on a straight line or a parabolic curve without any downtime, without being down on the knees time. I've got my closet full of being down on the knees time. I had to get back up. No one's going to do it for you. God can't be a God unless he has a manifestation. We can't be a manifestation unless there is a God. And if we're going to accept Adam and Eve as our parents, then we've got to do some soul searching and see, where's that getting us? Where's that getting me? Shakespeare, very valuable wisdom. Nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to follow Einstein's advice? Never stop questioning? And the advice of Jesus, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And Mary Baker Eddy, who says, we've got to live our prayer, and then we will be blessed. How about King Solomon? I'm not sure, because I haven't done any serious research about it, and I'm not that interested in it, about comparing Solomon with the wealthiest man in the world now. But he had been, all through history, of being the wealthiest man. And how did his wealth come about? Ask the Queen of Sheba. She couldn't believe the stories about how wealthy he was, so she had to go visit him. And guess what she said? His wealth is greater than his reputation. Even though his reputation is that he's by far the wealthiest man in the world. Why would she say that? How do you measure somebody that is on top? There's no relativity to compare. She said the reason was because everyone was happy. All of his servants, instead of being subservient, they were all joyful. Even she, who had a great inclination to be materialistic, recognized that the true wealth was not in what is physical, but in one's joy and happiness. And if you treat people as you would like to be treated, you're probably going to be following the advice of Frederick L. Rawson. He said, our whole purpose being, existing, is to make other people happy. He was an expert in electricity. Expert. People came to him from all over the world to solve their electrical problems. We're talking about companies that could hire anybody. But they went to him. When they couldn't solve it otherwise, they went to him. It might take him a month to get to where he is. This was, 125 years ago. 1900, there wasn't much in the way of missiles or jet airplanes, let alone ones that are supersonic or we're much faster than that now. But the point is, they would have to travel 2 months of travel time round trip. He had such a reputation for desiring to know about the Bible. He was an avid student. And he was known for his excellence in everything that he did. He excelled in everything. You may be interested in reading the bio we have on him. But he measured the electrical current within the body when someone was ill, and compared it to after they were healed. And this all came about because he was from the UK, and one of the notable newspapers there requested him to accept an assignment to find out if what they heard about Christian Scientists was true. And this was, again, 125 years ago or so. And he said, or the paper told him, that the claim is that Christian Scientists come here from America and they've either been healed themselves or they have seen other people be healed and they're teaching our people about it. And there's claims that people are healed through spiritual means. No drugs, no witch doctors or anything else. So he took on the assignment with great interest because he was always a student of the Bible. And he was always very interested in excelling in whatever he did. The result is that he became one of the greatest Christian Science practitioners of all time. And an excellent student of the Bible. What did he do? Well, for one, he discovered how to go back in time and heal. I don't know of any writing, and we have all of his writings that we're aware of. They're on the website. And he doesn't say anything about a connection with Nikola Tesla. But he discovered how to go back in time and heal. We have it explained on the website. We have, he mentions it in two books. One is called Life Understood from a Spiritual Viewpoint. And the other one is Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. In Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, there's a chapter called Applied Treatment. And in that chapter, he gives 1,315 different examples of ailments and how to heal them. As was mentioned previously, his recommendation was to flat out deny that any problem is real. He didn't ignore it, but he said you have to address it, and you should address it by name and flat out make the statement at the very beginning of your prayer treatment that it's unreal. If you've got a broken arm, you can say, there is no reality in a broken arm. It's unreal. There is no, in fact, he used the word no. He just says, there is no, and then whatever the problem is. There is no broken arm, for example. So there is no heart disease or cancer. You fill in the blank. Whatever the problem is. But he tested everything before he repeated using it. And if it failed the test, he would go back to the blueprint and figure out what was wrong. Was he totally on the wrong path? Or what adjustment needed to be made? So he would test everything, and if it brought healing, then he knew that he was on the right track. And that's exactly what he did with healing back in time. I won't give you any details about it because it's on the website, and I don't want to spoil your enthusiasm to learn from the horse instead of the messenger. But think about being separated from God. God could not exist if God did not have a manifestation. So therefore, his manifestation, you and me and everyone else, cannot be separated from the source, the only real source. And the only real existence is in the realm of God, the realm of perfection. And don't waste your time trying to talk to God. God doesn't have any ears. God is a one-way communication. Genesis 1, the very first book in the Bible, says that God is finished. He saw everything, and it was good. And then he rested. So the laws of God permeate every possible time and space. And of course, there is no real time. And if you want to find out about that, read Mr. Rawson's works. And there is no real space. The wealthiest man in the world is overcoming that. And there's other ones that are far more advanced that have instantaneous travel. Jesus had instantaneous travel. Mary Baker Eddy demonstrated instantaneous travel to and from. Are we going to stop questioning? Or are we going to continue to question forever so that we can be on a continuous path of progress? It's up to us individually. No one can work out my salvation. I can't work out anyone else's salvation. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute can't work out the salvation of anyone. Okay, let's go to the next point before everyone goes to sleep. This is getting to be a long one. Okay, so number 10. The dissection and definition of words, aside from their metaphysical derivation, is not scientific. So everything has to be addressed on a spiritual level. Mental. As a matter of fact, one more thing that Mr. Rawson said. He said, we should strive to do everything needed to be done physically by doing it mentally. He was at a shooting contest. A rifle that he'd never had in his hands before was provided to him. And he had two of his students with him at the same championship shooting match. And they all did the same thing. He'd never had the rifle in his hand. He held it up and pointed it toward the target. He turned his head aside and closed his eyes. He got his thought as clear as possible to get himself out of the way, to get his thoughts in alignment with perfection, with principle, which is balance and harmony, and with spirit, which is flawless as the only substance, with mind, which is infinite, no limit whatsoever in any direction, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-intelligence, all-wisdom, all-knowing, total, unlimited capacity, capability, functionality, facility, and the other things that have already been mentioned about what God is, what mind is, and all the other qualities. And when he felt everything was in alignment, with his eyes closed and his head turned away from the target, pulled the trigger. And that's how he conducted himself throughout the whole contest. And he won the contest. And the other two that were students of his did the same thing, and they ended up very well. I don't think it mentions in his writings whether they were like number two and three, doesn't matter. They all did the same thing, and they were effective at doing it. That's an example of not doing it physically, doing it mentally. The mental doesn't have any limits. Physical has the limits of physics. So, when it talks about the metaphysical derivation, you can't just dissect words unless you're doing it metaphysically. Otherwise, it's not scientific. Number 11. Jehovah declared the ground was accursed. And from this ground, or matter, sprang Adam. Notwithstanding, God had blessed the earth for man's sake. From this it follows that Adam was not the ideal man for whom the earth was blessed. The ideal man was revealed in due time and was known as Christ Jesus. We've covered all that, and that's the end of the key points. Let's take a quick look at John L. Sinton's work, and I'm just scanning it here. Yes, he brought up a good point. The textbook is divided into two parts: Science and Health, which is chapters 1 to 14, and 14 is Recapitulation, which, as you probably well know, recapitulation means summary of the important points. So it is really a summary of the important points of chapters 1 through 13. And chapters 15 through 18 are as follows. 15 is Genesis, which means that thoroughly covers the book of Genesis, which is considered the beginning of the Bible. And 16 is the Apocalypse, which is Revelation, which is the end. And that's the last book in the Bible, Revelation. So Mary Baker Eddy covers the Bible from beginning to end. And then 17 is the glossary. And 18 is the fruitage, which was mentioned previously, about 85 testifiers to 486 healings. So if we want to know something about the beginning, which is the book of Genesis, which is very important, then it suggested you study chapter 15. Of the textbook. And if you want to unravel all the symbolism in Revelation, otherwise known as the Apocalypse, go to chapter 16. If you want to learn how to pray, that's chapter 1. Table of contents. Take a look at it and you'll see the spectrum, and it's complete. And Mr. Sinton points out that spiritual evolution, not material, is worthy of the exercise of divine power. And that's from Science and Health, page 135. And it says here, the atom symbol is introduced to illustrate that in scientific demonstration, the inversion has to be faced. The negation is to be disposed of before the ideal man can be attained. Well, we talked about the consciousness and how it's easier to prevent things from going into consciousness than it is to let it get in there and then try to clean it out, like dropping the egg on the floor. Don't let it drop. Don't let the evil get into consciousness. We have to separate the personality from the qualities of the real man. And if we're dealing with a person that seems to be doing nothing but evil, we have to separate the personality from the evil. Anyone that is alert, which is only a small percentage, unfortunately, of the population, knows that if all you do is destroy the individual that is apparently doing the evil acts, there's more that can just fill the shoes. You don't get rid of the evil by getting rid of the person. You have to get rid of what the foundation of the evil is. The wealthiest man in the world knows this very well. He started a department, as has been mentioned in many of our prayer treatments, and is on the website. The department is titled DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. We had a link on there directly to the latest happenings, but they've kind of restructured things so that it doesn't just tell us by just clicking one link. Or maybe we need to update our information on it. But anyway, he found the source of money that was feeding the departments that were all sharing our tax dollars. And instead of it going to what the name implies, USAID, and the same thing with UNICEF, UNICEF. I mean, that's United Nations. And they show these videos of these very pathetic circumstances of children that are starving to death. And they want you to donate. And you donate. And what the DOGE department discovered was that it never gets to the intended cause of which the advertisement is promoting. It's all money laundering. Between 0 and 5% gets filtered down to the bottom of where the need is. So yes, be a person of giving. Be an individual that is a giver. But you're better off having a direct donation if money is going to solve a particular problem, which many times it doesn't. There's other things that need to be solved. Maybe what they're going to use the money to buy. You see someone homeless, you can always take them into a restaurant or take them to a grocery store and buy the groceries and give them to them. Instead of giving them money that might be spent on who knows what. Orphans. Have you ever thought about being a big brother to them, or a dad, or whatever? In other words, what is the real need? Not what is an easy solution for you, instead of just writing them a check. Well, we don't use checks much anymore, but instead of giving them the money directly, maybe give them what the money would buy, and instead of giving money to a big organization that gives you all these pathetic stories where they've siphoned it all off. If you want to help people in a country that is in great need, start with the U.S. If everybody adopted the golden rule, we would not have any people living on the street. We wouldn't have any lack of anything for anyone. Period. If people would just start being a giver instead of a taker, you could promote that. That would be doing a wonderful thing. Be an example. Give them ideas. solicit ideas from others. I know of a guy that was approached as he was going toward his vehicle, came out of a department store, and the guy came up to him as he got to his vehicle and he said that he was in great need of money. He was soliciting money for food. And the guy said, well, what's the problem? The guy looked good. He wasn't living on the street. He was dressed in, you know, clean-looking work clothes. Looked like he was ready to go to work. His hair was fine. It was combed and so forth. And he said, well, why are you needing money? And he said, I lost my job. I didn't have any savings. And I haven't eaten in the last 2 days. He said, what do you do? He said he was a handyman. He said he could fix anything, and he loved doing it. He'd been doing it all of his life. He said, do you have a vehicle? He said, yeah, I've got a motorcycle, but I don't have any money to put gas in it to even go and check out the ads in the newspaper of people that have help wanted ads. So he said, I'll tell you what. I've got a list I've been accumulating for some time of things I need in my home that are done. They need to be repaired and fixed and whatever. And let's go down to the, get your vehicle, take it to the gas station. I'll put gas in it. You follow me up to my home. And we'll go over the list. And we'll take it a day at a time if the list, if you have confidence that you can do anything on the list at all. The guy ended up working for him for 3 months. And the day after he was finished, he had already prearranged, took him 3 months to do it. So by like 1 day before the end, he had arranged a full-time job to take effect when he got done, which was the next day. The guy told him, well, we probably only have a few more days of work. And so he started looking around. And he had the money because he had been paid for all of his work on a regular basis. I know someone else that came out of the most popular retail store. You all know the name. And there was a woman in a wheelchair, a young woman in a wheelchair, and her mother was there. She had no control over her body. I mean, it was really a sad situation. She could hear, but she couldn't talk, and she couldn't control her body motions. And she spoke a different language. The mother did. The other one didn't speak at all. The one in the wheelchair, the young lady, which was her daughter. So he gave him a generous donation, but then when he walked away, he's trying to think, well, you know, we don't even speak the same language. What should I be doing? And the thought came to him to print out the chapter of Science and Health that was the preface in the first chapter. The preface starts with the words, today is big with blessing. And the prayer is on how to pray. And he also gave her the last chapter, which was the one on healing. So he had it printed out in her language and took it to her in a three-ring binder so she could easily flip the pages and so forth. The next time he went back to the store, she came up out of her chair because she sits down all the time with being there with her daughter so people can come and give them donations, which it's pathetic. Most people just give them coins. And she just had this big smile and hugged the person. And there wasn't any voice because they couldn't speak the same language. But she got the point across that she was very grateful. So each time he went back, he gave her another chapter. She hasn't reported, and you can't see any visible change, But the point is, she is on the path. She's open to a spiritual solution. And she is uplifted in her attitude and hope about there being something better than where she is now. Mary Baker Eddy asked a student that visited her, asking for advice on how to take care of a problem that didn't seem to be progressing. And so she said, when you're walking in public, what do? He had no idea what she was even talking about. He didn't know what she was even talking about. So after a few moments and he said nothing, she said, are you a Christian Scientist? That was his wake-up call. That was his wake-up call. He knew what he should be doing, and he wasn't doing it. If he saw an accident, we've probably all witnessed an accident at one time or another. He said, think about mine being the only action. Or she said this to him. Think about mine being the only action. And if mind is the only action, and God is mind, and God is only good, could there ever be an accident, let alone anyone being injured or pass on in the accident? She said, if you see a stray dog, think about the supply for everyone is already where it's needed. She says, go buy some dog food. And give him food right away and water. Get his attention so he'll follow you to the store. If you're in a house that is burning, you don't sit inside and pray. You pray while you're running out and helping other people, knowing that there is nothing that can be destructive. There is no fire. There is no destruction. And then think about what God is. God is the only power. Man can't be separated from God. God's image cannot be separated from its source, which is God. And God is only good. And He's already completed everything. If we're going to be cultivating a life of giving, we have to include all humanity in our perspective. It's that simple. We have to broaden. We have to go to the 35,000 foot view, as one of the greatest journalists has said. Yeah, he's attacked all the time too. They've tried to take everything away, even his name. He's still there. He never stayed down on his knees. He never gave up. He never quit. One more thing about Bicknell Young. It was mentioned that he raised himself from the dead after he had drowned and been declared dead. And you can read the details about that on the website. But he had people come to him that had trouble with their business, and they wanted him to be involved in bringing it back to health. And in questioning them, he found they didn't know anything about running a business or running their business. So he sent them away. He said, you have to learn how to run a business. Christian Science isn't going to do magic for you. Now, these are my own words. Not what I said, but what I'm going to say right now. And that is the common phrase that God helps them who help themselves. It appears that the correct interpretation of that is not that God is going to do something if we do something. If we do what we're supposed to do, then we will be in alignment with God's laws and we will benefit from those laws. God doesn't have to take any action. His work is already done. We have to get in alignment with the universal laws that govern everybody, everywhere. It doesn't matter what planet they're on, if they're on another planet, if there exists life on other planets, which there is some that believe there is and some that believe there isn't. And what your belief is doesn't, not my concern. But wherever, the laws are universal. The laws of God are universal. There's not different laws on Mars or Venus or Saturn or the moon or anywhere else than there is right here. Because there's only one set of universal laws. They are universal. Thought can be individual, collective, or universal. And universal in these terms means whatever existence that exists, regardless of the planet name. It's infinite. There's no limit. One of the most important things to remember is about flipping anything that is unfavorable to the truth, about what's the really underlying fact about the laws of God. Because if something appears to be evil, it is our misconception of the truth. Not that evil is good, or that evil is true, or that we can change evil to be good. It has to be replaced. If you have an evil thought in consciousness, it has to be replaced. You don't improve 2 plus 2 equals 5 to 2 plus 2 equals 4.9 or even 4.1 or 4.00 ad infinitum with a 1 on the end. It's 4 exactly. The truth is truth exactly. It's not like gold. Gold can be like, what, 99.5% or 99.9% pure or whatever it is. There is no alloy with truth. It is either true or it's not true. Love is either love or it's not love. There's no dilution, no deflection. It's either it or it isn't. Dad used to quote, and he'd say, either you got it or you don't got it. He was mocking the poor grammar of someone that he had heard many years ago before he repeated it. Do you have the gana, the intestinal fortitude, the courage to peck open any shell of limitation whatsoever? Everyone has some kind of a limitation that is in their thought. If they didn't have, they would have ascended. Jesus had to work toward that. He had to work toward understanding unequivocally that there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. And that's what the probationary period was after the resurrection. This prayer treatment will be closed by reciting a prayer that Mary Baker Eddy gave to her most advanced class, the last class in which she conducted the Metaphysical College, and then she closed it, and everyone needed to then rely on her writings the last 12 years that she was visible. And in that last class, she chose everyone that could attend it. And if you weren't invited personally by her, you could not get in the door. And if you could And if you were invited, then you knew that you were a group of the top group. And to give you a clue of what I'm talking about, on the third day of the class, she assigned them to go out and be involved in a healing and come back and report the next day to the class. Every single one did it. Every single one. No exceptions. She gave that class, first of all, everyone was awarded the CSD degree for Doctorate of Christian Science. And she gave that class 7 prayers. 6 of them are very short. Well, 5 of them are very short. 1 is a little bit longer. And the last one on love is very long. So I will recite the one on spirit, because this focus has been on the false sense of man, which is of matter, Adam and Eve. So I will recite to you the prayer, and the title of all 7 of them are the same except for one word, and that is diapason of heaven. So there's one for mind, one for spirit, one for soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And I will recite the one on spirit. All of them are on the website. Very easy to get to. Under the D's for diapason of heaven. Here is the prayer, diapason of heaven, with a focus on spirit. And sometimes an additional thought occurs while I'm reciting the prayer, and if so, I will give that to you after the prayer. So when you hear amen, wait until everything stops, because I will also give the date and the time, so there's a record thing. These are all extemporaneous, so nothing is edited, so you'll have to overlook the rough edges, because as the thought occurs, it is stated. So here is the prayer on diapason of heaven with a focus on spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. Yes, a couple of thoughts have occurred. One is the value of repetition and of utilizing all of one's senses. For example, the really professional instructors of advanced classes will phrase things 2 or 3 different ways with the same message, because they know that the so-called human brain does not remember anything that it hears once. Hears twice, it remembers a little longer. 3 times, a little longer. So they would do it 3 times. But the really excellent teachers will point out to you that the only way to really remember something you learn new is to do it. That's the first thought I wanted to convey to you. Now, the other one, in repetition and using senses, we have eyes, ears, the sense of smell, feel, and taste. The seeing, spiritually, says we should be able to tell the difference, our perspective, perception. Tell the difference between good and bad, evil and good, healthy and not so healthy. So we need to utilize that sense. Hearing is understanding. Smell, very important one. Does it smell right? Animals have a wonderful sense of smell. They know the difference between whether they should eat something or not. A human generally has to taste it, although sometimes the smell is easy to detect that it's not good anymore. So we need to use all of the senses. And one of the senses, or two of the senses, that are usually neglected when somebody wants to learn is the voice, both as an output, and hearing as an input. If you want to learn about how to heal, you are going to magnify by a multiple if you follow our instructions. Number one, you have to have the attitude of giving. Forget about taking. No use even beginning to try to learn about how to heal yourself or anyone else if you are taking. Now, how does that tie? How does healing tie into the senses? When Mary Baker Eddy discovered Christian Science in 1866, there wasn't any facility for recording one's voice. They didn't have any copy machines, scanners. When she made copies, they had to be handwritten. Of course, she had a staff. But when the printing press came along, that totally changed the facility of communication. When the telephone came along, Wentworth Winslow got a telegram in the early 1900s from another country. He lived in New York, and it said, 6 treatments, please. That's it. He didn't know anything about the individual, anything about the problem, how long it had been a problem. Now, the length of time doesn't matter, except for the fact that the treatment should include the fact that time has no bearing on solving it. And in healing, very rarely is the patient with the individual practitioner. So space is normally overcome in every healing. But if you don't record, you're missing out on a very important dimension. Now, I know that there are individuals, and I've known at least 2 that I know of, maybe 3, that were aware of a photographic memory for themselves, and I've known of at least 2 or 3 others that I know had it, but I never met them. So if you have a photographic memory, then you can revise this to meet your particular situation. But I'm speaking to the other 99.999 ad infinitum that do not or are not aware of that they do have a photographic memory. So recording is very important. You record the original text of whatever it is you're studying. And then you put it in your own words, as if you're teaching it, and you record that, and you contemplate it, and any improvement, you put that also in a recording. And then you listen each time. If you record the original, listen to it. Each thing that you record, you should listen to. And you will find that you will learn probably more from the recording of your own voice, even the original, than you did the first time through it. And then when you put it in your own words, and then when you do it again, you will learn from it. And you can utilize your time. It doesn't have to be time that you're exclusively doing this, because there's much more time in the day that you need to be doing other things. You fill in the blank. Maybe you're getting a snack in the kitchen. Maybe you're in the restroom and taking a shower, or whatever. Driving. Walking somewhere. Waiting in line at a store if you're doing your own errands. Anyway, if you follow where it says heal everything, it probably will be an improvement over what you would do strictly on your own. And like I say, there's some people that are already absolute experts at time management, goal management, priority management. They're experts at reading. Some people can read thousands of words a minute because they can look at a page and it's in their memory. So this isn't for the ones that are the 0.000 ad infinitum with a 1 on the end. It's for everyone else. Okay, those are the extra thoughts. The only other thing I want to say is the time and the date. It is Saturday, February 14 at 08:54. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on the title of Adam, Not Ideal Man. And it's Plank 29 of 32. And the ideal man is what we're striving to accomplish, which is infinite, so it never ends. The end.